Files Radio.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.
Black woman in a genre dominated by white males, Butler's work broadened the themes and vision of science fiction. Over the years, her work has inspired a legion of fans, including authors Adrienne Brown and Walida Imarashi. Brown and Imarashi drew inspiration from Butler for their anthology, Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements, which was published in 2015. The anthology puts an emphasis on speculative fiction. Speculative fiction imagines alternate worlds not with the goal of escaping reality, but rather to inform reality. Sci-fi is presented as a tool to imagine radical solutions to issues of the present and as a means to organize. In The River, Brown presents a radical and supernatural solution to current issues plaguing the city of Detroit. What if the Detroit River was alive? How would it protect itself and its shores? Here are selected excerpts recited against two tracks by Shabazz Palaces and a third by Flying Lotus and George Clinton. The River by Adrienne Mary Brown. Something in the river haunted the island between the city and the border. She felt it when she was on the waves in the little boat. She didn't say anything because what could be said and to whom? But she felt it, and she felt it growing. Felt a restlessness in the weeds and shadows that held Detroit together. Off the river, out of the water, she found herself in an old friend's music studio. She asked him, "What's up with the river?" He laughed first.
"Oh, did I mention?
Your river? Man, Detroit is in that river. It's like an ancestral burying ground. It's like a holy vortex of energy. That's why some folks won't anchor with the city in view. Might hook someone before they ghost." As the summer had gone on, island disappearances had put the spook in her completely, and she circled further and further from the island's shores, closer and closer to the city. Which meant, on the evening of the mayor's August cocktail party, she was close to his yard, close enough to see it happen. The waves started to swell erratically. The guests, oblivious to the phenomenon, shouted stories at each other, and that's when it happened. First thing was a shudder, and then one solitary and massive wave. A sickly, bright, green whip headed toward the mayor's back. As she watched, the wave crashed over the fence. Hitting the house with its full force. Receded as fast as it had come. The mayor was nowhere to be seen, nor was his wife, and others were missing. She still went out in her boat, and every now and then she'd see through the blue something swallowed, caught, held down so the city could survive. Something that never died, something alive. Of Rivers by Langston Hughes. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in veins. My soul has grown deep like rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and had seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
My way, it feels like if you want.
not speak. You made me feel like living, girl. What do you do to me?
Now what am I supposed to
do? What you want me to do?
Badu, the essence of Afrofuturistic singing in a jazzy world. Yeah.
I am phenomenal. I am black. I am woman. We are five phenomenal black women. A Black History Month event. Join us on February 7th for the first edition of the Phenomenal Five at Le Belmont. 4483 Boulevard Saint-Laurent. Doors open at 7 p.m. Showtime 8 p.m. Tickets available at the Concordia Caribbean Student Union at Guy Metro and Studio Alchemy at Snowden Metro. $25 early bird, $30 in advance, more at the door. For more info, text 514-585-5156, The Phenomenal Five. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
The Center for Gender Advocacy invites you to come on out and show your love on Sunday, February 14th for the annual Memorial March for All Missing and Murdered Women. 3 p.m. in front of Saint Laurent Metro, corner of Saint Laurent and de Maisonneuve. We seek to raise awareness in our communities and in the media about the deeply systemic nature of this gendered and racial violence. You can find more information at missingjustice.ca. Join us and show your love. Sunday, February 14th at 3 p.m. in front of Saint Laurent Metro. Hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Explain that, because today we have an awesome interview.
Yay,
this is the XX Files on CKUT 90.3 FM. Val Techie Gal in the house with
Amanda,
the Data Ranger.
I like that. Okay.
Where it came from. It was like Afrofuturist channeling there. Data Ranger and I are here. And Fanny Dufresne, Fais-pas le frein. I like that. Fais-pas le frein. Don't hit the brakes, baby. She did an awesome interview with Yatasha Womack. So that's why we started with little Erica Badu. Because other than George Clinton Maggot Brain, which is the essence of Afrofuturism music, check it out. We might play that at the end if we can find it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Maggot Brain by George Clinton is a chapter in Yatasha Womack's book, Afrofuturism. She wrote the book on it. Wow. Even though weirdly, like Mark Derry, this white theoretical culture theorist in the United States, wrote the book that used the term Afrofuturism.
Okay.
But it's an interesting book. We'll get to that later. But today it's about Yatasha and Fanny Dufresne's interview. And I'm going to start with one of my favorite little bits that she got Yatasha to say, which is just so cool. Check this out.
Afrofuturism is a feminist space. And essentially, there are a lot of women creators, a lot of women who think as Afrofuturists, who feel very comfortable doing so within the space of Afrofuturism because they can express in any way that they want. They can feel very much empowered and they can define themselves comfortably.
Yeah, that's right, because Afrofuturism is about a world where women not only run the communications on the enterprise, but they command the friggin' ship. And we're all black in the future.
Future is black.
The future is black because black is just so cool. It's like the color of space.
It is. Wow.
Sparkly. So we're going to go to Fanny Dufresne's interview with Yatasha. They had a chat during HTMLs in November last year. We were so happy to have Yatasha here as a keynote speaker. And the problem is this was like Fanny's first interview and it's on me. I was her mic coach. I didn't give her enough really good mic tips, I think. So Yatasha's volume is perfect.
Perfect.
But you may not hear Stephanie sometimes. So sometimes we may pause it just to repeat what she said because she's asking the most awesome questions as someone who's getting a degree in feminism at the Simone de Beauvoir Institute, my girls. This girl is smart. Check it out. So here she goes. Bring it.
It's great, and I'm super intimidated and shy about doing this interview, but I'm going to try.
Thank you.
Okay, so could you start by just presenting yourself, your name, and just say whatever you want to about who you are.
Sure. My name's Yatasha Womack. I'm author of the book Afrofuturism, as well as Rayla 2212.
Okay, great. Could you, so for an audience, for people who don't know what Afrofuturism is at all, could you just briefly define what it is?
Sure. Afrofuturism is the intersection between black culture, the imagination, liberation, and technology. And I also like to say it involves some mysticism. And it's also a alternative way of looking at the future, an alternative way of looking at other lives in the present, but informing it with Black culture.
You referred a lot during the talk to this idea of race as a technology. Could you explain a little bit what you mean by that?
Sure. Well, you know, race as a technology is a big part of the conversation around Afrofuturism. And one thing that many of us know, but we don't always articulate, is that race is a creation. And race, you know, Black, white, as we understand it today, was really created to justify the transatlantic slave trade. And it was substantiated through law and enforced through violence and created this imbalance of power in many ways. So there have been many people who fought against that, and a lot of things have changed. But in Afrofuturism, we talk about this concept of race as a technology because it helps people to understand that not all technologies are progressive.
You mentioned how Afrofuturism is about reconnecting with past histories and some histories that have been erased from the present eye, but at the same time reimagining and projecting alternative futures. How does that differ from like post-racial utopias? Relationship to race and the future?
Well, what Afrofuturism does, you know, it pulls from aspects of the past and creates another future, but it also sees time, you know, the past, the present, and the future as one, as this, you know, united experience of sorts. And so on the one hand, it reclaims a lot of lost histories, you know, a lot of really interesting things that help shape our understanding of humanity that we're no longer aware of. But it can also be a way to kind of project what you want into the future and to really look at how you can create new experiences, in some cases pulling from some of these, you know, great cultural dynamics of the past to help us understand our new world. But in doing so, it changes the present. You know, it changes how you experience yourself and how you relate to your own communities. So I think when you talk about the idea of post-racial, you know, just the whole concept that, you know, race is a technology and really contemplating and working around that is a step towards getting there. I wrote a book called Post-Black, which talks about the diversity within, you know, Black American culture especially, and kind of this emerging identity in the 21st century. And while we may not be at post-racial yet, you know, these are certainly steps to getting there. But I think one of the points to contemplate is that this system of race very much is one that was created for specific reasons. And the more we understand it as a creation, I think the more it kind of changes how we act in our day-to-day lives.
So Afrofuturism is a term, so it was coined in the 1990s, but also retrospectively kind of
applied.
Yeah, applies to a lot of forms of creation, especially by people of color in music and film and fiction and science fiction. But at the same time, and you mentioned it during the talk, it's also connected to a form of politics of liberation, maybe in a non-linear way.
Right.
I don't know, but so how would you articulate that connection between those works of creation or art and this politics of liberation?
Well, in some cases, you know, art or, well, it's a couple things. You know, there's the creation of images in the future, or it's the creation of any kind of art form that where you're pulling from these areas that we now call Afrofuturism that changes the individual themselves, right? Whatever personal process they go through facilitates its own change. But then the works themselves When people see works that connect with ideas they've had, or it connects with images they've wanted to see, you know, that empowers them. In some cases, it might validate the ideas that they have, or it might give them new ideas for what they want to be, or how they want to go about things, or what directions they want to move into. And so, in that way, it has a very practical application to it. I talk about, in the book, Afrofuturism, I mentioned the fact that Martin Luther King was a Trekkie, you know, and that he loved Star Trek, and that when Nichelle Nichols, you know, wanted to leave the show in the 60s, you know, he inspired her to stay on the show because he said that she was inspiring women and inspiring new ideas about the future. And oddly, the character she played, Uhura, is probably still one of the most popular women on a sci-fi television show. You go to Comic Cons, you see people dressed as her all the time, but probably more significantly, Nichelle Nichols herself went on to work with NASA to help them recruit women astronauts, and then inspired Mae Jemison, who became the first Black woman astronaut. So there are some real world parallels here, and that's just important to realize. So it's not just the realm of the imagination.
Talking about women's place in Afrofuturism, you talked about it as a feminist space that is very much open to women's creativity and to feminine self-expression. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what you mean by that, or maybe how Afrofuturism could be understood as a feminist project?
Sure. Well, Alondra Nelson, who's a professor, she created the first Afrofuturism website in the 90s. And when I interviewed her for the book, she said that Afrofuturism is a feminist space. And essentially, there are a lot of women creators, a lot of women who think as Afrofuturists, who feel very comfortable doing so within the space of Afrofuturism because they can express in any way that they want. They can feel very much empowered and they can define themselves comfortably. And there's not much criticism around that in their ability to do so. A lot of the people who've really forwarded Afrofuturism in the past decade or so, particularly on the music scene, a lot of them are women. If you look at Janelle Monae, if you look at, FKA Twigs, I would put in that category, or if you look at Erykah Badu, for example, you know, those are women who are uncategorized, who you can't really categorize. But then you have other titans like an Octavia Butler, who's inspired a host of Black women sci-fi writers. And they were inspired largely because she was a Black sci-fi writer and her writing was so good. And I think that her temperament also inspired many feminists to look at feminism from other perspectives. So ultimately, you know, Afrofuturism is a space that's really comfortable for women to work in and to reimagine themselves. And there's no one way to be a woman as expressed through Afrofuturism.
In the past years, the language of intersectionality became very prominent and kind of central in feminism and in many activist movements. Where, from your position, where do you think that white feminism is with regards to intersectionality and race today, and how can Afrofuturism or what does Afrofuturism can bring to that dialogue and discussion?
Well, it's interesting. I think feminism in general views itself as being intersectional. And it's when you have women of color saying, no, it's not intersectional, it's not embracing these other aspects, that the conversation kind of emerges. And the question becomes, okay, well, how can you create deeper connections or better inform or equip yourselves looking at these other perspectives? You know, when we talk about feminism, are we talking about what women are we talking about? You know, what are we identifying, you know, sources of strength based around? and to really kind of assess that, you know, and to neutralize any of some of the color.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Africa. Wasa, 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 wasa lele.
Wasa lele.
Yeah, yeah. Africa.
Wasa lele.
Wasa, 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 wasa lele.
Wasa. Mama.